everybody, and welcome to the April edition of the Artful Asking Success Club. Hi, this is Marcy Heim, and my greetings to you all. Happy Passover to my Jewish friends. I know you'll miss the call today, but take in that recording. And a special welcome to the new members that are joining us today. I see a few of you on. Fantastic. There's nothing like showing up in person. Just a reminder, each and every one of these calls is recorded, and it's available on my site for you to listen to anytime. It's also sent out as a link following up to each call, so you will get the audio recording of every call as well. And if you invest in the 12-pack of programs, all my past recordings are open to you as well, and I've been at this since 2011. So it's an inexpensive and relatively easy way for you to get a dose of energy and information each month. I make it an audio because I want you to be able to listen to this perhaps while you're driving or taking a walk or somehow adding that professional development into your life in an easy way when you're not sitting in front of your computer, because I think we just do so much of that. We do so much of that. If you're a member already, I want to thank you for honoring me by making that investment and coming each month into your and improving your personal and professional knowledge and growing. If you're a guest, please consider joining today and make a commitment to be here every month to gain new insights and tools. If you ever have troubles, please send a note to info@marcyheim.com. And somebody from my team, but probably Kathy, will help you. Kathy is C-A-T-H-Y, and you can reach her directly at Kathy@MarcyHeim.com. So I have a few announcements. Coming up this next week, I'll be headed to the NATO conference, and that's the association for all of the YMCAs across the country. If you're headed there, please send me a note and say, hey, Marcy, I'm going to be there. Let's meet up. And if you are going to AFP Icon in San Francisco, April 29th to May 1st, I am hosting a reception with Gail Perry for some of the speakers there that have been part of our shows and also for our select group of invitees, which includes all of you. So please do let me know if you will be there so I can get you the details for my Monday night reception, 6 to 7 p.m. on Monday night. Also coming up, I'm hosting my More Major Gifts workshop in Chicago, June 12th and 13th. This is two solid days with me, and generally I keep these to 20 people or less, and it's just a tremendous way to really dig deep into how you can either improve the major gift work you're doing now or do more of it for your organizations. Right now, we still have our early bird registration at $497. So please do consider doing that. It's on my website. Just search for More Major Gifts. I also am hosting a year-long program now called Dream, Act, Achieve. And this is coaching with me and my team. And we're opening enrollment again in May. We add people every quarter. Make a note now, our next call is May 16th, and that'll be on Taking Responsibility, I Create My Life, No December Drama. So this call will be talking about taking personal responsibility, but also about what you better be doing now so that come November and December, I'm not getting these emails, Marcy, I haven't seen them all year and now I don't know what to do. You're right. So we don't want any of that December drama. So get on May's call. And just to be clear, because there was some confusion this month, these calls, unless I'm like on a plane, these calls are the third Tuesday of every month, the third Tuesday. So if you program your calendars and you say like every 3 weeks or 4 weeks or something, it's going to get messed up when we have a five-week month. So some of you got messed up this month, and I'm sorry for that, but it's the third Tuesday of every month. So next call is May 16th. And then finally, for each call, if you send me a question and you put in capital letters, question, Artful Asking Success Club, I will answer it either on this call or before this call. So feel free to use that as another way to get some personal coaching. Okay, that's it for the announcements. Thanks so much for being with me today. Now let us stop. Deep cleansing breath. Breathe. Slow down. Focus. Phones off. Email off. Just take this next 60 minutes or so for you and be with me. Please, just be with me. You deserve it, okay? This program is part of a year-long special program that I created called Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success, in raising money, but yes, also in life. Drama down, dollars up, happy up. You see, we spend precious energy and time engaged in emotions that don't serve us. In fact, they drain us. And that's why I created this. How many times have we angst over what might happen if? Those are key words right there. What might happen if? Oh, that major gift doesn't come in. We miss our goals. We don't get a raise. Maybe we get laid off or fired because of something. How many times do we put off dealing with something? And then we finally deal with it because we get pushed into it, and we say, oh, that wasn't so bad. Good heavens, why did I make such a big deal about that? Why did I wait so long to deal with it? I want you to visualize a dial, and maybe that dial goes low, medium, high. Maybe that dial says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, but picture that dial, and then picture your hand holding, grabbing the tab on that dial that makes it turn. Your hand controls the dial. Please see that. Your hand controls the dial. You control your hand, and the hand controls the dial. So I created this program to help you become aware of what cranks your dial. When is somebody else grabbing that thing and cranking it on you? And you say no more. I crank my own dial. I can crank it up and I can crank it down, and I can decide where that dial is. Because our success and joy is dependent, sure, on what we do each day, what we write, speak, say. But more important than that outer game, it's dependent on that inner game. Our mindset, mostly on our inner game. And this is all about realizing, being aware of your inner game, what you're thinking. Why is this so important? Because our thinking leads to our feelings. How we feel about something comes from what we think about. So I'll be real honest. You all jump on, and I would do exactly the same thing if I were you. Like 30 seconds before this call starts. This has been the case for since 2011 when I started these calls. But still, every single month I go, oh, is somebody going to come? Is anybody going to come? That is me not controlling my dial. That is me not controlling my dial. And I have to say, Marcy, come on now, girl. Every month, they come on a minute too, 30 seconds too, a minute after, 2 minutes after. Marcy, you jump on about 4 minutes after. Come on now. And then here you all are, right? That's what I mean. Control that dial, being aware. Because that feeling then leads to our belief. Oh, no one's going to come. And that belief leads to our action. Well, I don't even know why I bothered to spend hours and hours writing this thing. And then that action leads to our results. I might not show up ready and excited about being on this call with you. So instead I have to say, no, Marcy. They'll all be here, and they come every month, and you're excited they're here, and you spent a lot of time preparing for this, and it's going to be a great call, and I am here for you today. I'm 100% in. I'm more than 100% in today. So today I'm asking you to think about problems. Really, not the problems, but how you think about the problems. How you think about the problems. There's a song by the Letterman. I got troubles, whoa-whoa. I got worries, whoa-whoa. I got wounds to bind. I Googled, there are more songs about troubles and problems. Oh, my goodness gracious. Problems, obstacles, roadblocks, objections, concerns, lions and tigers and bears, oh, my. Oh, whatever you call them, we all have them. We all have them. From the wealthiest person, from the person that looks the happiest, from the person that's struggling the hardest, we all have problems. We all have roadblocks. Let's talk about first how we think about our problems in general. Then I'm going to end today by specifically looking at how we manage obstacles as we're presenting an ask. So today is going to be half about problems in general, a little more than half, and then a part about specifically dealing with obstacles, as we call them, or objections when we're presenting to our donors. Okay, so how we decide is an action word. Decide comes from I think it's a Greek word. Tony Robbins taught me this, called size is cut. Size is like cut off, size. Decise is means to cut. So how we're going to decide, so that means we cut off any other thought or action but the one we have decided to make. That's the power of a decision. So how are we going to decide to think about them, react to them, talk about them? Plays a major role in how much emotional energy we give away to deal with them. So here are five tips to help you. And I'm arranging these tips as a question and then the action you take. So the first question, how are you thinking about your problems? Well, you know that I always begin by saying, let's get on the same page about what is a problem. So a problem is defined by my good friends at Wikipedia, who I, by the way, support every year with my annual gift. A problem is defined as a matter or situation, listen here, regarded as unwelcome or harmful and needing to be dealt with and overcome. Ooh, did you hear that? Regarded as unwelcome and harmful. Right? Not fact is, or research shows us. No, it means you regard it. That's all about you and how you are thinking about a situation. And you are determining it is unwelcome or harmful or hard or challenging or a roadblock or a barrier or an obstacle or an objection. You are deciding it. You are making that decision. It is regarded as welcome, unwelcome, or harmful. Regarded, not fact. We become what we think about. Let me hear you. We become what we think about. You can crawl into bed at night and think, ah, today was a great day. Or, man, what a pile of problems I had today. Funny thing is, often these 2 days aren't that different. Both probably had traffic. Both probably had food, whether you're eating it, cooking it, spilling it. Probably had other people in it. Probably had work. And hopefully it had some play in it. But one day, every jerk was on the commute. You spilled your coffee and people were so stupid and nothing seemed to work at work. On another day, you enjoyed music as you sat standstill in traffic. You simply wiped up the coffee and went on. Your explanations to others really caught on. They seemed so smart that day, didn't they? And the dots really connected with your donor touches. The days are pretty similar. There are very few things. So I remember exactly what I did when they announced the bombing of the Twin Towers. I know exactly where I was. I was focused in a meeting with my admin, and I just kept focusing. I just kept working away. But I remember where I was that day. That was a different day. But most of the days are really very similar when we're deciding whether we go to bed saying, what a great day, or, oh, it was a pile of problems today. What changed? You. You. You're the only thing that changed. What we focus on grows. So first, we have to be aware of what our mind chatter is saying to us. What are we saying? Oh, man, this kind of stuff always seems to happen to me. Yeah, I hit the bump just as I took a sip of coffee. Man, this poor me kind of thinking creates an energy that others will buy into. Oh, yeah, I hate it when that happens. Oh, man, you know, let me tell you what happened to me. Oh, this was terrible. Let me tell you my story. And we want to try to one-up each other in the worst stories we can find. It's pretty easy to form a gripers group. If what you focus on grows, and it does, that means we'll attract more and more and more and more problems to us if we look at them, if we focus on them. We can turn into a regular crap magnet, just bringing all that crap right to us. Now listen to me. Don't you do it, and you stay away from people who do so they don't get any of their crap on you. When somebody comes up and says, oh, man, I was stuck in traffic today, spilled a coffee, you say, well, it'll be a great day from here on in. I just know it. You have a good one. Bye. And you get away from them so fast I can't tell you. And also you help turn them around. Better, let's dial down that drama. Take a breath. Immediately look for solutions and options and choose to think about it differently. It's unusual for this sort of thing to happen to me. Good thing coffee comes out of this shirt pretty easily. Or I wear black a lot. Good thing I wear black. It doesn't show. I just spill down the front of my shirt. If we focus on possible positive scenarios and solutions, it's just amazing. They appear. Trust me on this. You start looking for it and you find it. What we focus on grows. We'll attract more and more solutions to us if that's what we're looking for. So tip number one, interrupt your victim problem thinking by saying, something good's going to happen to me. It's hard to be negative and say this at the same time. Try it. Stand up. Say it out loud. It's from my friend Joyce Meyer. Something good's going to happen to me. Tip number one. Okay, number two, question. How do you answer the big two questions as we recognize or consider a situation we regard as a problem? So, when my teenage stepdaughter was struggling a bit living between two homes, we decided we'd all go in for some counseling. So, at our meeting, the doc said to us, whenever you are confronted with a problem in this situation, there are two key questions you must ask yourself. Oh, I was so pumped. I thought, oh my gosh, these are the two key questions you ask yourself whenever you're dealing with a problem. Here we go, the two key questions. Yes, yes, yes. What are they? What are they? What are they? And she said, ask yourself, am I tired? Am I hungry? What? Are you kidding? Here I am at the edge of my seat, and you're asking me to check in if I'm tired or hungry? My friends, from babies to beyond 80s, this is true. Be vigilant of where you or your colleagues, donors, and families are on the tired or hungry scale. Worst off, if they're tired and hungry, you don't want to deal with this right now. Be keenly aware and understand that this has incredible impact as we regard a problem. That word regard, what we decide we regard as unwelcome or harmful, what we decide is even a problem, is mightily impacted by are we tired or are we hungry. Oh, I got to tie my shoes. So tip number two, action you can take. Schedule problem solving at optimal times for everyone, even if you've got to put it off. Certainly don't put these meetings right before lunch. Don't schedule them at 11. Let's get this in before lunch. Worst time to do it. Think back of the times things didn't go very well, and sometimes those meetings were before lunch. How often were they before lunch? And if you're pressed into making a key decision and you know you are just like at the end, you are tired, you are hungry, you are exhausted, I will say, I know you want my answer now. I'm sorry, I can't give it to you right now. I am exhausted, I'm starving, and I'm just not going to be able to put the intelligence and the wisdom and everything I've got into it at this point. Let me get back to you tomorrow. And most of the time, I'd say 99% of the time, you can put this off. Put yourself in the best physical, energy, food, time to deal with those questions. It's amazing the difference it makes. Did you ever wonder why some people always bring food to meetings? They are smart. They are smart. I wish they'd sometimes bring healthier food, but they bring food to meetings for this very situation. They want to put everybody into a spot where they're not operating from being hungry. So schedule those problem-solving times when everyone can be rested and not hungry as much as possible. I realize this will never be perfect. Question number three, how big are you compared to your problems? What? What am I saying? How big are you? My coach, T. Harv Eker, taught me not to think of the size of the problem, but to think of the size of me. So is the problem that big, or am I just that small? Mini me, mini me, mini me. Is it just this little Marcy looking at this big problem and going, oh my goodness, that's a big problem. What is little Marcy going to do? It's not the size of the problem. It's the size of me. Think of the first time you ever got behind the wheel of a car. My oldest son, RJ, put it off over a year. He was terrified. And he grabbed that wheel and he was, I could feel it. And I said, son, take a breath. We were in a great big huge mall parking lot. He said, now pull it down into drive and just ease up on the gas, ease up on the brake. You don't even have to put your foot on the gas. And he was totally 100% into this thing called driving. Good heavens, now he's got music going on. He's holding a cup of coffee in one hand. He's working on something else with the other, and I think he drives with his knee. I mean, it's just a different problem now. Did driving the car change? No. The size of RJ changed. He's bigger than that problem now. Do you see what I mean? The problem of driving didn't change. He grew to the point where it just wasn't a big deal to drive. So metrics can look overwhelming to us when we first begin them. After some time, though, we get into this rhythm. Playing an instrument, writing a great letter, using a new computer program. Ask not what is the size of this problem, what is the size of me? Mini-me, or hey, Maxi-me is attacking this problem, baby. Okay, so tip number three, actions you can take. Look at something you regard, there that word again, you regard, that means you consider, you make, you determine. It's not fact. You regard as a problem. How can you get bigger? So instead of mini-me, you can, and I've got five things here for you. You can plan. Last time I blew up at my son because he wasn't ready after the soccer game and it made me late. I'll plan more time before my next thing next time. No. Two, learn. Take a webinar. You could be on free webinars from sundown to sunrise and all throughout the day. Take a webinar. Read a book. Read an article. Google it. My son, again, RJ, who is a chemistry and computer science person. He says, Mom, when you get at some of these things, just Google, how do I get the period to move from here to there? It's amazing what'll just come up on Google. Just Google it. Learn. Get an answer right now. According to Albert Einstein, you can't solve a problem with the same kind of thinking that created it. So you got to learn something different so you have some different ideas. Number three, practice. Write and speak your ask to a mirror. We've talked about that in a past Artful Asking Success Club call. Practice your script and make your calls for appointments at different times. See what happens. Golf. The more you golf, the better you get at it. Write. The more you write, the better you get at it. Practice. Practice. Okay, so we're talking about how to get bigger to deal with problems. Plan, learn, practice. Four, ask for help. Oh, gosh, why is this so hard for some of us? You can ask Google. You can get ideas and solutions. You can ask others. How did you handle this? I have a donor that's doing this. How did you handle something like that? And five, laugh it off. You know, laugh at your problems. Everybody else does. Oh, look at Marcy just spilled coffee all over her phone. It's important to realize that any problem, no matter how big it may seem at the time, has a solution. And ask yourself, will this be such a big deal an hour from now? I can wipe up the coffee and dry out my phone. It still worked. In a month from now, I won't even remember it. In a year from now, 5 years from now. So really ask yourself, you know, can I laugh at this problem? Because it's just now. As long as I'm breathing, there's no problem beyond solving. There is always hope to those that will look for it. There's always hope to those that will look for it. Take life in stride. Don't get bogged down by it. And don't forget to enjoy it. A free and fun mindset alone will go a long ways to helping you deal with any problem, objection, obstacle, situation. Okay? All of these things make you bigger than what you regard as a problem. It's never the size of the problem. It's the size of you. Number four, is resentment creeping into the picture? Often when we measure things, we compare. We compare ourselves to others. When we compare, we often come up short. We don't think we've raised as much money. We don't have as big an income. We don't have as nice a car. Our kids maybe aren't doing enough. We're comparing. We can't ever get something that we resent. And oftentimes when we don't have something, we resent it. Or when we come up short, we resent that thing. That's how we deal with it. This is a quote I saw from Carrie Fisher. I'm not sure she's the first one to say it. But resentment is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Let me repeat that. Resentment is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Right? We've taken in that poison. It only affects us. It eats at us. And ideas fueled by resentment manifest as poor actions and terrible words. Whatever you resent, you push away from you and out of your life. So tip number four, action you can take. If someone else has something you want, or if someone has more and you're feeling that resentment come in, instead, thank or bless that person and thank or bless that thing. So thank you, Joe, for leading such a successful life and having such success. Thank you, Joe, for your wealth. Bless you, Alice, for having such an incredible career and success. Bless you, Alice, for this wonderful career and success. Thank them and bless them. Bless the person, bless the success. That's how we bring more of it into our lives. Very important. Okay, number five, how are you reacting physically? Remember, a problem is defined, and I keep drilling on this because I want you to understand a problem, an objection, an obstacle. It's all something you regard as a problem, an obstacle. It's not a fact that this is a problem. It's how you regard it. It's all about how you think of it. So you regard as unwelcome or harmful. So our brain is wired to protect us. We are reptilian creatures. So when our brain senses that we are seeing something as, regarding something as harmful to us, it instantly kicks in that fight, flight, or fright hormone. Instantly. And what that does to us is our breathing gets faster, our heart rate beats up, our heart's racing, our hands get clammy, our body tightens, our gut's in a knot, our face looks strained, our speaking gets fast and loud. That is an auto reaction when we define something as a problem. Our mind physically changes our body. We get ready to fight or bolt. That's stress. That's worry. All of those things kick in, that fight, flight, or fright. So tip number five, how do you handle this? What is the action you can take? One thing that is with you always is your breath. You've always got it. It's free. It's ever-present. It's at your call. You can do it. It's always available. I use it all the time. And I literally will say, deep cleansing breath. I have just as effectively brought down my own drama, and I've impacted those around me by doing that. Deep cleansing breath. Before you speak, breathe. Before you swing, breathe. Before you react, breathe. Slowly, deliberately, purposefully. In any situation, it's a problem solver. Sometimes when I don't, I will have people around me say, Marcy, aren't you going to take a breath first? Because they know me so well and they know it'll immediately center me and make me better able to help and serve them. In any situation, it's a problem solver. At the very least, it buys you 3 seconds of time to think about your next step, where you need more information, how you need to get clearer. It lets you distance yourself emotionally from the problem. Look at that problem as an impartial observer while you're taking that breath and not as someone actively involved with it. So why is managing our problems, challenges, obstacles, objections so important? Why is this so important? Number one, the longer it takes us to deal with problems, the bigger they grow and the harder it'll be to sort them out. They're like weeds that grow in a beautiful garden. When they're little, you don't see them, but they get bigger and suddenly they're yucking up your whole garden. Secondly, when ignored, problems can be accepted as norm. This is really powerful. Listen to me, people, in nonprofits especially. So there's a hole that gets punched in the wall of your office building. Maybe you have clients and there's some anger management stuff you're dealing with. And, you know, oh, my goodness gracious, there's that hole in the wall. And after about a week, you don't really notice the hole in the wall much anymore. It sort of becomes the norm. We've got a wall. It's got a hole in it. Kid you not, a true situation with my clients. I walked in. And I said, my goodness, you have a hole in that wall. And they went, oh, yeah, it's been there a long time. That is a problem that has been ignored for so long it becomes accepted as the norm. Or you're standing next to that printer, hand feeding it because the stupid thing jams. And you've dealt with that printer for years. And you don't even realize anymore. It's become norm that it just takes that much time to get that kind of a task done. Not acceptable. that is a problem. When ignored, it becomes accepted as norm. It's possible for you to become used to poverty and lack. It's even possible to get used to mediocrity and failure. Ignore the problem long enough, and it may no longer be a problem to you. That's scary. That gets my fight, fright, and fright growing. Oh, no. Because the trouble with this is that you won't be living the kind of life you should be living. Making do is never a good thing. Never a good thing. What you settle for, I promise you, you'll get. Three, lastly, a problem that's not dealt with can lead to other problems. Unfortunately, problems are really social creatures, and they will eagerly invite other problems into your life if you harbor them for too long. By not controlling one, you may be opening the door to many others. It's sort of that domino effect. One action or lack of it can lead to many different consequences. Here I have only to say that if you look at the recent debacle with United Airlines where they dragged the passenger off the plane, that is a marvelous example of the downward spiral that happens when some basic problem skills aren't in place. Without clarity of the right actions to take, these situations can quickly escalate as people lose focus on the organizational goals. It's been estimated that managers spend at least 25 to 30% of their time resolving workplace issues. All of this takes away from performance and triggers more problems. It can be really costly. So, deal with those problems. Okay. Now, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk specifically about your givers. As you work around the cycle of successful relationships, we create a joyful giver. We identify people who share our values and interests. We create a joyful giver. We speak that artful ask. We become a grateful recipient. Repeat, repeat, repeat. When we're at many of the phases, creating a joyful giver and speaking an artful ask, but even as we are showing appreciation, we'll run into a lot of people say in our fundraising jargon, obstacles. Obstacles or objections. Obstacles or objections. First off, I don't see them as objections. I see them as opportunities for me to get clearer on how I can best serve my donor. And I find that these fall into four main categories. First off, there's something to do with the institution or the organization. It's something to do with something that's going on in the institution or organization or a change oftentimes. So let me give you an example. Perhaps there's been a leadership change and your giver is unsure about how this leadership change is going to impact the results of their giving. Or they don't like the change in leadership, or they miss the person who used to be there, or they don't like the change in the fundraising staff, or they're objecting because it seems like these leadership changes happen too often. Or perhaps the institution or organization has made a decision on how it deals with something. There was a time at the University of Wisconsin where they photoshopped in an African-American person in an otherwise picture that didn't have one just to save time. It wasn't really meant to be a big malicious deal. It was just sort of a quick fix. Oh, my goodness, the thing erupted and exploded and took pages and weeks of apologies and emails all around. So the institution or the organization does something. Here's how we react to perceiving that as an objection or a problem. First off, get it to the right level of authority. Even if you've got your quote-unquote speaking phrase about that problem, you've all been given your talking point, be sure that you talk with your giver about the level of authority that really is appropriate for this issue or question to be addressed by, even if you know the answer. So, for example, say, I understand your concern. Can I set up some time for you to visit with our executive director personally about this? So you want to take them right to the top or the highest person you can take them to talk about this if they are one of your major donors. Again, we're talking about major donor interactions here. So you want to get, you can answer it, but better set them up with the highest level person you can. This doesn't have to be hours and hours of visits, but set up a 15, 20 minute, half hour visit for them to directly address this. Even if nothing changes, the fact that you've had that meeting is huge. Sometimes the issue with the organization or institution is a giving process issue. So I didn't get a thank you note. My gift got put in the wrong fund. There was no follow-up on a prior list. My letter came out saying, Mrs. Smith, and I've divorced that jerk 3 years ago. Again, there always we start with an apology, but when we can connect them with the person who has the power over the fix, it's all the better. So when something gets put in the wrong fund, I oftentimes will ask someone in the accounting office to make a quick call and say, you know, I'm sorry I got that in the wrong place. It's been corrected. Won't happen again. Now, they're not happy about making that call, and it makes them more conscientious about their work. And the person whose gift was misdeposited feels like they've talked to the person who's got the power to make the difference. Instead of you saying, I'll get into this and I'll make sure it doesn't happen and I'll, you know, connect them. If folks didn't get a thank you note, again, sometimes that's a question of what happened there and who is the best person for me to have them talk to about that. I solve a lot of problems by doing that. And again, there's also, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but work with the administration and the leadership to secure the official response to a key institutional issue. But be sure you keep your opinion out of it. So in other words, this conversation doesn't go like this. Well, our official answer is that the blah, 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 but I think, no, that's not how you address it. It's not about your opinion. And you don't even say it in such a way that it implies that, well, we've been told to say blah, blah, blah. No. This is how the institution is handling this. We've taken these three steps. And this is a goal we hope to accomplish by addressing this unfortunate situation this way. Okay? Sometimes there's a problem with the solicitation team, and you'll get some objections, some put-offs, and it's mainly because your prospective giver doesn't want to talk about major gifts in front of some other person. So it might be that you brought along the board president, and they're not comfortable having that conversation in front of them. Or you brought along somebody else in the organization, and they really want to have that detail about just what they're going to give and how they're going to do it with you. This is really easily fixed. Well, I'm sensing that we have talked about today an option for you to participate in this program. Let's set up a time next week when I can come back by myself and we'll really hammer out the details. We'll really take a look at just what next steps we need to take. How does that sound? And if they say, oh yes, well, you know that was your objection. It was the fact that they want to talk to you alone. Okay, the second area that I find a lot of objections come up when we're working with our major donors is the project or program fit or implementation. So this centers around things about what exactly is my giving going to do? What exactly is this impact going to be? They're vested in what they've invested in. Let me repeat that. They're vested in what they've invested in, and they want to understand how this is going to come down, how it's going to happen. So similarly to the first area I talked about, you can try to answer that question, but a far better action is, that's an interesting point. Can I share this with, and think about the person who is key in working with that program or project who could follow up with you and discuss their specific concerns. Outline the concerns in a sort of a plan that you can follow up with at that ask visit. I understand these. So let's look at doing this first, then this second, then this third. This is going to sound counterproductive to you, but hear me out on it. I know you could try to solve it right there on the spot. And a lot of people will say, you know, push for that close, you know, get to that problem and push for that close. If it's something really easy, like can I send the check in 2 payments or something like that, sure, deal with it. But if it's a knottier issue, step back and instead of trying to hash it out on that ask call, stretch this out. Again, sometimes we get ourselves into trouble because we want to move too fast. We build trust by slowing it down, by slowing down the process. You know, if you think about a basketball team, I love basketball. When a basketball team gets into trouble or they're getting behind, and the tendency is to go faster, they screw up more and more. Instead, when that basketball player dribbles down the court and he takes giant slow steps and he bounces the ball slowly, if that's possible. But you can literally watch them, and the commentators will say, the Badgers are slowing down the pace here. The Badgers are slowing down the pace. That's what we need to do with these situations. We need to take it, well, that's an interesting comment. Let me check on this, and I'll get back to you. It slows it down. It gives everyone time to do, remember, from earlier in this call, it gives everyone time to breathe. It gives us time to consider if somebody was tired or hungry or whatever might else be going on when this problem or objection is raised. So it shows your consideration. And be sure then, too, that another step we take is to address any concern that's possible in our memorandum of agreement or our letter of agreement or our pledge document. So we can also use that form as a way to pinpoint what someone might be concerned about. Always ask, can I share this with someone to follow up on those specific concerns? And you can do this follow-up in a phone call or a correspondence from the key people as well. These don't all have to be face-to-face things to address these objections. But here's one that's vitally important. When these objections come up that really mean making a shift in what that program or project is, listen clearly. In other words, they want to tweak what you're doing to meet their interests. And that does not line up with your organization's priorities and missions and goals. You must step back and say, that's an exciting concept, but we have to look at whether that fits in to our organization's mission and goals and what we might lose track of or not do as well because we take this on. Can we explore that? Can we have a conversation around that? And most of the time when you talk it through with donors, they will understand. Okay, number 3, the dollar amount. An obstacle or an objection comes up around the exact dollar amount you've asked for. Even though you've done good work leading up to this ask, you're feeling a pushback about the amount. First off, let me tell you from my experience, when someone says, whoa, that's a lot of money, that's all they're saying. They're not saying it's more than they can give. They are simply saying, that's a lot of money. They're making a statement. They're saying a fact. That's a lot of money. You can also ask them, it sounds like you've been wondering why we need that amount in order to do X. If they talk about the amount, seek to help them be clear on what that amount will do. So it sounds like you're wondering what exactly is required to accomplish this project. So in other words, they don't do your job. They don't run your organization. They don't do whatever project or program you do. So you might happen to know that it takes X amount of money just to put plastic gloves on everybody that serves the food at whatever you do, at your pantry or your kitchen or your event or what have you. And, well, in some major naming options, there may be some benefit from simply the prestige of making the gift. Most times, it's really helpful to get donors crystal clear on what things cost. They don't have any idea. I don't know what these things cost. So the kinds of expenses you have running your programs, not a detailed budget that gives them 2 cents. You don't want to micromanaging your organization. But just, you know, just to give you a few examples, these are the kinds of costs that we manage when we run this program. Okay, that will help a lot. And, of course, I know many of you are familiar with this, but it's so important to help your donors understand that when they are making a major gift, and remember, major to them might be different than major to your organization, but the fact that they can break it up and do it over time. Perhaps you want to consider handling this as a monthly payment or for a smaller level major gift or larger major donors. Perhaps this is something you'd like to tackle over a number of years. For this project, we're looking at accepting pledges on a 3 to 5 year period of time. Is this something that will help you? You can also look at having them support something annually now and then endowing it with their estate. And it might be very exciting for them to understand that this is something they can have named in honor of themselves or a loved one, but they don't have to do that big naming gift right now. They can handle that in an estate plan. Or there's some kind of a mix of annual and endowment. At a minimum, when the dollar amount is a challenge, you want to talk to them about just doing something annually now and seeing the results, experiencing that, and then consider growing it over time. Perhaps they've just made another gift, so they say that sounds like a lot of money. I'll a lot of times say, is that a lot of money right now because of other things that are going on? Well, yes, actually. Well, let's look at starting this next year. Or let's do it an annual gift this year to launch the program, but then next year we'll work on an annual and an endowed amount to start that endowment. I like to say, sounds like you want to do this, but we need to talk about the ways you can do this. May I share how others have handled this situation? Is that something you'd like to explore? Finally, the fourth area is reflection and consideration. And I would love for you all to really hear this because I get this all the time. When people call an objection, I'd like to think about this, or I'd like to talk to my spouse, can we get back to you? People will be a lot of times told, you've got to close on this, you know, say, well, what do you need to know right now for you to make a decision right now? Frankly, my friends, I think that's rude. I think when we actually speak and ask, it becomes real for our donors. It becomes a specific amount, a specific project, and now it's real. And we've been talking about it in our pre-ask calls. We've been telling them this amount of money does this amount of things. We've been doing all of that, but now it's real. Now we're actually making that ask. And when it's actually real for them, it's not unreasonable for them to say, whoa, okay, this is what we've been talking about. Yep, this is what you're asking me to consider. Yep, okay, I'm ready to do this, but gosh, I just want a little time to think this through. That's not the problem. The problem is how you react to it. The problem is how you respond. Please don't let your fear of, oh, this is going to get away, they're going to change their mind, or something about that, or they're trying to put me off. No, they just want to think about it. What's most important is get crystal clear on how that follow-up step is going to happen. So, of course, I'll plan to call you in about a week, say next Tuesday. Or, of course, when is the next time we can meet to talk about anything that's come up for you in regards to accomplishing this gift I know you're so eager to make? Sure. What would be the best time for us to revisit this? And you don't leave without having a date for a phone call or for a time or for an agreement at least on when you will be following up with them. That's all that really has to happen here. That's all that has to happen is you just need the next step. All right, what if they say something like, no, I just don't think I could do this? That one always stumps me because we've done our pre-work and what has changed? What's happened? And I address that with, oh, is there something here we need to talk about? Is there something that's happened since we met last? Because this is feeling different to me. I would like to help resolve this regardless of your giving decision if something's come up for you. And finally, if they just simply say, no, not now, and aren't willing to share, I always end by saying, may I stay in touch? Your relationship is important to me. May I stay in touch? And I know that you're all wondering now, what's going on here, Marcy? And I will share with you there have only been a very few, but the only time I've ever gotten no, not now, not ever, go away kind of a vibe is when there's been some kind of a personal issue that's come up in their life. Between the time that we've set our appointment and the appointment itself, it's really a very kind of a unique and specialized thing, but it does happen. So may we stay in touch is really what I want, because that donor is important to me. That donor is more than a gift. That donor is not just a wallet to me. That donor is a person, and I want to stay in touch, and I want them to stay in touch with my organization. So to quickly review those four things is looking at objections as, are they institutionally or organizationally based? Are they a project or program fit, or how we're going to actually do the work? Is the dollar amount a challenge, or do they simply just need some time to reflect and consider? Life, friends, with our givers is really a series of problem-solving events. That's all it is. Always start from yes, and we'll work out the kinks from there. Always start with yes, that's a wonderful idea or thought or problem or situation or comment or whatever you want to call it. Yes, let's look at that. Yes, I think we can work this through. Yes, I think that'll be fine as we work through this gift. Yes. Always start from a yes. Don't be a victim and say, why me? Why are they bringing this up? Be excited, because how you solve these situations defines the amount of money you raise. It defines your results. But even more important than that, even more important, it also defines the quality and the joy of your relationships with your donors, with your family, and in your life. So let's say, hot dog, here's another problem. Yeah, bring it on, baby. I create my life. Yes, you do. Look ahead with confidence. Stay focused on what you want, not what you don't want. Stay focused on what lies ahead, not what's in your way. Don't be pushed by your problems. Be led by your dreams. Remember the words of Thomas Paine, the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. So my fellow fundraising colleagues and friends, go forth bigger than any problem you meet. Not me, 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 me. But I am a big problem solver. I am bigger than those problems. Until next time, invest in joy. Never forget how I believe in you and the power you have to compose a good world. And we so need you now. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker. And this has been the Artful Asking Success Club. Dial down the drama. Dial up your success. Thanks for being with me today. Bye-bye now.